For Pacifica Radio, April the 4th, 2024. I'm Scott Horton. This is Anti-War Radio. All right, y'all, welcome to the show. It is Anti-War Radio. I'm your host, Scott Horton. I'm editorial director of antiwar.com and author of the book Enough Already: Time to End the War on Terrorism. You can find my full interview archive, more than 6,000 of them now, going back to 2003, at scotthorton.org, at youtube.com/scotthortonshow, and all your favorite podcast catchers and things out there. And introducing today's first guest, it's Will Porter. He is assistant news editor at the Institute and regular contributor as well to antiwar.com. Welcome to the show, Will. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Scott. Thanks for having me back. How are you?
I'm doing great. Appreciate you joining us today. First up for topics on the show is Israel and the slaughter in Gaza. I won't call it a war. It's more of a canned hunt, I guess. So can we start out with just give us an update on the latest casualty numbers?
Yeah, sure. So a lot of these figures are coming, of course, from local health officials in Gaza. And of course, there's all kinds of dispute about how accurate those are, although I think in the past we've seen they do generally track with independent figures. But I think some of the latest numbers they're putting out are over 33,000 Palestinians killed. And that includes, they don't distinguish between fighters, but that's, you know, they say two-thirds are women and children, so presumably non-combatants of those, you know, 33,000. And then not to mention there are, you know, untold thousands still buried under the rubble. So I think, you know, the 33,000 is likely to be an underestimate. Not to mention all the people who are, you know, facing extreme deprivation and who may die related to that. So, you know, the excess death rate is almost certainly higher than 33,000. But that is basically the number that's being given by the health ministry in Gaza. Mm-hmm.
Well, and, you know, after half a year of this, it's not just those directly bombed or shot or crushed under their falling apartment buildings. But we do have the excess deaths now that are directly attributable to deprivation from the war as well. And I know it is kind of annoying. I heard a hawk complaining about this, that, oh, everybody's always on the verge of famine, but the famine never comes. So, yeah, world's smallest violin playing or something. But then I'm reading headlines that say that people, particularly children, yeah, are starving to death there. What is the truth of that? Will, do you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any, like, overall figures of how many people may have starved to death, but I've also seen just, like, you know, steady reports trickling in. I know that in one of the recent ICJ cases, they were running down a lot of these statistics. And yes, indeed, people have, like, documented cases of people dying from, you know, starvation and malnutrition. So, you know, I don't think, and in fact, one of the lines they had said was, we are no longer on the brink of famine. We are in famine. It is happening now. People are actually starting to die from, you know, this kind of deprivation. So yeah. I don't think they are quite on the brink of famine anymore. I think it is, you know, is actually begun in earnest. Mm-hmm.
Well, and there was a story on antiwar.com yesterday about the increased number of stillbirths, yeah, because of the malnutrition of the mothers. And of course, you know, they're all malnourished and can't produce breast milk in many cases for infants as well. So,
yeah,
it's which, you know, brings us to, I guess, the biggest story is the Israeli slaughter of this aid group's, I guess, entire workforce there, World Central Kitchen. So I was wondering, first of all, can you give us a background of who is this group and then take us through what happened to them?
Yeah, sure. So as you said, this is a aid group called World Central Kitchen. I think they're based in D.C. They're founded by some, like, celebrity chef. And yeah, effectively, they deliver aid and supplies throughout all kinds of war and conflict and crisis zones. I think they're active in Ukraine, where they have also lost personnel. They were founded, I think, after the earthquake in Haiti back in 2010. But they have been one of the, like, main aid groups in Gaza, helping to distribute and, I think, actually provide the aid in conjunction with other aid groups. And in fact, they have been one of the major groups pushing to open this sea corridor, this maritime corridor between Cyprus and the Gaza coast. And so far, they have helped to organize two pretty huge aid shipments through that route. The first, I think, had like 200 tons of stuff that was like a dry run. And then the more recent one had 400 tons. And we should note, too, that these are some of the first, like, major aid shipments that have come through the Gaza coast in, like, two decades, at least according to the aid group. So what they did, I think, is kind of a big deal. They are a major, well-known humanitarian org, and they do closely coordinate just about everything they do with the IDF, including these latest aid deliveries from these ships.
Okay, so take us through what happened to them on the 1st.
Sure. So I guess just to, as you said, just to kind of cut to the chase, the Israelis bombed a convoy carrying these international aid workers in the Gaza Strip on Monday night. Most of them were foreign nationals. There were, I think, seven passengers in total on the convoy that was hit. I think there was one dual U.S.-Canadian citizen. There was three U.K. nationals, people from Australia and Poland. And then I think there was a local, like, Palestinian fixer. And so as far as I understand, on Monday night, they were helping to offload, as I mentioned, that aid shipment from Cyprus. They were helping to offload supplies from those ships into a warehouse in central Gaza, this town called Deir al-Balah. And so as they're leaving that warehouse, they're traveling down one of Gaza's like main highways. Their convoy was bombed by a series of Israeli airstrikes, reportedly three strikes. There were three vehicles in the group. There was two armored cars, and I think just like a regular SUV. And all of them were targeted one after another. At least one of those cars was very clearly marked with a huge logo on its roof. I guess in hopes of preventing exactly this kind of thing to make you visible from the air. This did happen at night, though, so perhaps it wasn't extremely visible. But you can see this in footage, too, of the vehicles taken after the strike. You can see the logo. You can see this gigantic hole punched in the roof like it was clearly directly hit by some kind of munition. And according to what seems to me like pretty credible reporting by Haaretz, these strikes were very, like, calculated and deliberate and, you know, not to mention in their description of them, very brutal. According to them, after the first car was hit, the passengers tried to grab their wounded and scramble to the second car. It was some distance away. That one was hit, and then they tried to do the same thing, escape again to the third car, only to be bombed yet again, killing, you know, everybody. And not to mention, in addition to driving in marked vehicles, the route for this convoy was coordinated with and approved by the IDF along every step along the way. The aid workers apparently had even called in to say they were being attacked as it was happening, but I guess it was too late by then. I think it happened pretty quickly. So yeah, effectively, I think that is the, you know, that's what happened to these guys.
Yeah. All three cars. And now the Israelis said, oh, well, we're going to do an investigation because it was a huge accident.
Well, I mean, they've been sort of tight-lipped about their public explanation about what may have happened. But in that Haaretz reporting in local Israeli media, the rationale that was given, the justification that was given by these military sources, anonymous, you know, talking to Haaretz, they say that they think some kind of armed terrorist was spotted with the convoy, that it was just, you know, one single guy. And then so they decided he had to be killed right there on the spot. And it turns out that guy, whoever he was, the suspected terrorist, he never left the warehouse. He was never on the convoy. So this whole thing was, you know, pretty botched. So even if you believe that maybe there was a militant there, like on site somewhere, this was botched. He was not on the convoy.
Yeah.
You know, very little detail has been given about this. He's not been named, this like alleged terrorist operative who they say they saw there, who was quote unquote ostensibly armed per Haaretz. Perhaps he was a security guard guarding these supplies. There have been like food riots in Gaza. People are really desperate. And so you might need an armed guard. However, it should be noted that the World Kitchen says that they do not use armed escorts. And so that's what they maintain. So that would definitely be at odds with seeing some armed guy at the warehouse. But yeah, so far that's all pretty murky about exactly why the Israelis felt like they had to do this or what, you know. I heard the term misidentification being given by one of the military officials. It sounds like that's basically in line with what's been reported about this terrorist guy. But they're being pretty tight-lipped about like what may have actually happened so far.
Yeah.
Hey guys, I've had a lot of great webmasters over the years, but the team at expanddesigns.com have by far been the most competent and reliable. Harley Abbott and his team have made great sites for the show and the Institute, and they keep them running well, suggesting and making improvements all along. Make a deal with expanddesigns.com for your new business or news site. They will take care of you. Use the promo code SCOTT and save $500. That's expanddesigns.com. Man, I wish I was in school so I could drop out and sign up for Tom Woods' Liberty Classroom instead. Tom has done such a great job on putting together a classical curriculum for everyone from junior high schoolers on up through the postgraduate level. And it's all very reasonably priced. Just make sure you click through from the link in the right margin at scotthorton.org. Tom Woods' Liberty Classroom. Real history, real economics, real education.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Well, it could just be that they've succeeded in marginalizing the UN aid groups there, and now this guy was trying to muscle in on that action, and now they've canceled that.
Right.
Maybe they just prefer that the Palestinians lay down and die.
I mean, they have targeted, they've killed something like 200 aid workers in both Gaza and the West Bank just since October. So like, this is not some kind of new or extremely rare thing. The way the Israelis, of course, make it sound like, oh my God, this never happens. But, you know, hundreds of aid workers has been killed in this conflict.
Mm-hmm. And then do I have this right that Joe Biden, after this atrocity, laid down the law and signed a deal to give Israel a bunch more American F-15 Eagles?
Yeah. I mean, despite issuing, if you saw the White House statement, he's like, oh, I'm outraged. And he used some language that he typically wouldn't use. But that never translates into any kind of, you know, like, we have so much leverage over the Israelis with these weapons. We also recently just approved, I think, like, what, 1,800, 2,000-pound bombs for them, which, you know, part of the whole rationale of why we're giving them aid is, oh, we have the small bombs that would help them limit the destruction. But then when you look at what we actually give them, it's like mostly 2,000-pound bombs, which if you go ahead and YouTube that, throw that into YouTube, 2,000-pound JDAM, just to get a sense of how large these explosives are. Like, this is like, you know, blow up a large building type of explosive. It's not a Qassam rocket.
And now what about Al-Shifa Hospital? I didn't even know the thing was open for business. They went back and had to destroy it again, chase everybody out of there again, or what happened?
Yeah, correct. They said that that Hamas had regrouped at the facility and said that they had to go through and do like a more, because people probably know they had previously raided it before. They went through there. They produced like a couple rusty AKs and were like, look, a Hamas command center is here. This is proof. And then they left for a while, and because the area that Al-Shifa is located in northern Gaza, it is absolutely like Hiroshima. It is devastated. And so the fighting had moved south for quite a while, but the IDF now claims that Hamas had regrouped in Al-Shifa, and they went in there and they say they, I forget what the number they give, I think it was like 100, 200 quote unquote terrorists they killed. And yeah, they leveled a lot of the facility. And some of the healthcare workers there are saying that, like, you know, several people died as a result of being moved off of whatever their, you know, ICU equipment was, their ventilator or whatever they were on. So this caused several deaths. Another thing that seemed like just kind of depraved is the Israelis had apparently dug up some of the mass graves in the courtyard, because the hospital was forced to bury some of their dead in the previous siege. And I don't know for what reason the Israelis did that. I don't know if they're looking for hostages or trying to identify someone. But yeah, they apparently had unearthed all these corpses on the courtyard. And not to mention ran over bodies as they left with their armored vehicles and stuff. Just, you know, really adding insult to injury like every step along the way with that.
Can you tell us about this article in 972 Mag and their report on this program, Lavender?
Yeah. So this is just like we've had this is sort of a genre of these type of reports lately, of these new and different Israeli artificial intelligence systems used for generating target lists. And if you've been following this for quite a while, they have had the Israelis rely extensively on what they call these target banks, where they basically use their quote unquote intelligence to build up a series of targets of things to bomb in time of conflict. They do it all the time. And so with the use of these programs like Lavender, they have grown their target banks like insanely to something. I think in the early stage of the current conflict, it was like 37,000 Palestinian targets. And forgive me, I'm not aware of like the exactly technical details of how they, you know, collate and generate these target lists. But they are using this to feed a bunch of raw information into this program, and then it spits out a bunch of people to kill, basically. And one of the features of this Lavender program is that it is now including much lower level Hamas operatives and sort of expanding like what is the basically like loosening the rules of engagement have been loosened quite a bit to where they are now much more willing and likely to target the homes of lower level militants. And in that 972 Mag piece, they also mention another separate ancillary AI program called Where's Daddy? And that one helps them to organize their strikes for when these militants are at home in their homes late at night when their families are more likely to be around. And so, yeah, there've been quite a few of these. They're also 972 had another great report about something called the Gospel. in their story about the mass assassination factory. And I'm actually not aware of exactly what the distinction is, because it sounds like the gospel and lavender effectively do. They have a similar function, you know, in terms of like generating these vast target lists. But they're doing it at a rate way faster than they ever could have done before just with humans. So it's just it is indeed a huge kill list that they're generating. They're using this AI to consult. And a problem, too, is the humans on the ground aren't really consulting real intelligence. The machine spits out a name to kill, and they go and kill them with very little, consulting of outside information.
Mm-hmm. And listen, everybody can find that at 972mag.com. Lavender, the AI machine directing Israel's bombing spree in Gaza. And they have a link there to their previous article about the gospel. And in that one, they also talk about power targets, by which they mean people who have no power at all, women and children, families of people that they're after, and including and especially the families of journalists. That'll teach you to be a reporter in Gaza. And then they blow up their whole family while the dad's out at work. It's the most sadistic thing going on in the world today by far, Israel and America in their slaughter in Gaza. And that's Will Porter. He's assistant news editor at the Institute and also a regular contributor at antiwar.com. Thank you very much for your time, Will. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Scott.
All right, y'all. And that's it for the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's Antiwar Radio. I'm here every Thursday afternoon from 2:30 to 3 on KPFK 90.7 FM in L.A. See you next week.